Okay, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Bava Basra daf Nun. We left off on the very top of daf Nun Amud Aleph, but I would like to backtrack to Mem Tes Amud Beis because we're really right in the middle of a sentence over here. So let's go back to Haraya Yesh, seven lines on the bottom of the page on Mem Tes Amud Beis, which is halfway through the page on Mem Tes Amud Beis. Today's shiur is sponsored once again by Dr. David Landerer, in honor of his wife and children, and Li'ila Nishmas, his mother, Golda Bas Simcha Le'a Shalom, as well as by Daniel Sadian for the success of Klal Yisrael in these times, and Hatzlacha for our soldiers and for our captives. They should return home safely. And also in honor of the memory of Rabbi Dr. Brian Galbit on his fifth yard site, Baruch Tzvi Ben Ruve Nassan, from friends of Brian Galbit, his Neshama Shev Naliyah. And also by Chani and J.J. Hornblast in memory of Chani's father, Mayor Penstein, Mayor Yosef Ben Avram, whose yard site is next week, his Neshama Shev Naliyah. We thank all of the sponsors very, very much for the sponsorship. So what we're going to discuss today is, first we're going to talk about the idea that a husband does not have a chazakah b'nichsei ishto, and the implication is, but he does have a raya, meaning if there's a shtar, if there's edim, then he can claim that that he had purchased nichsei ishto. So the Gemara is going to question whether that is in fact true. Then the Gemara is going to reconcile our Mishnah, which holds that a woman can sell her nichsei melug to her husband, meaning haraya yesh, that there is a raya, and we'd accept that raya. We're going to try to reconcile that with the statement of Amemar, who seems to hold that a woman will always say nachas ruach hasisi labayli, that a woman always has a claim that it wasn't a serious sale, I was just trying to make my husband happy, I didn't want to upset him. So how do we reconcile Amemar with the implication of our Mishnah? Then the Gemara on Amud Beis is going to try to reconcile our Mishnah with a different Amora. Our Mishnah says that a man cannot have a chazak on his wife's nechasim. We have to try to reconcile with the Shita of Rav, because Rav writes that Rav says that a woman needs to make a macha'a when someone is machzik in her nechasim. Well, if a man can never have a chazakah anyway, why would the woman ever need to make a macha'a on the property? He's never going to develop a chazakah anyway. So the Gemara is going to have two ways of resolving, reconciling how Rav could be not arguing with our Mishnah. Two ways to reconcile Rav with our Mishnah. So again, first reconciling Amemar with our Mishnah, then reconciling Rav with our Mishnah, and that's basically a summary of the whole daf. So let's begin again. Let's backtrack. Seven lines from the bottom page, Mem Tesam Beis. So the Mishnah had said that a man who has who's enjoying his wife's nechasim for 3 years does not have a chazakah. He cannot claim that he had purchased it, but the implication is harayah yeh. If he's able to produce Edim or a shtar that his wife sold in the field, then we would trust that. But says the Gemara, Tema, Nachas Ruach Hasisi Labayli. Why would we trust that? After all, can't she come with a taina that, yes, I sold the field to my husband, but I didn't want to. I was just trying to make him happy. I just didn't want to upset him. So I just didn't want him to get angry. After all, we do find that such a taina exists. Milo Tanan, don't we have a Mishnah in Gittin Daf Nun Amud Beis that lakach min ha'ish v'chazor v'lakach min ha'isha, that if a person buys karka that's meshubah to a woman's ksuba from the husband first, and then he goes and he buys that same karka for a small amount of money from the woman in order that she shouldn't come to collect that karka as payment for her ksuba, then mekho batel, that the mekach from the woman is batel. And if the husband dies or if they get divorced, the woman can go and collect that karka from her ksuba. Why? Why is the mekach batel? She sold him her rights in the karka. Alma Amra Nachas Ruach Hasisi Labayli. Apparently because we have such a svara called Nachas Ruach Hasisi Labayli, that she has the right to say that I didn't really mean the sale, I only did it in order that my husband shouldn't get angry at me. So Chanami, over here also, if that's going to be true when she sells it to a third party, so when she sells it to her husband, for sure she should be able to say, why do you think I sold it to him? Because he was pressuring me to sell it to him and I didn't want him to get upset. So Chanami Tema Nachas Ruach Hasisi Labayli. Over here also, when she sells it directly to the husband, yeah, you have Edim, you have a shtar that says that I sold it to you. But the whole thing was only Nachas Ruach. So that's the Gemara's Kasha. How come in our Mishnah it implies that only a husband doesn't have a chazaka, that a husband only doesn't have a chazaka b'nichsei yishto, but implies that if he has a raya, then we trust that she actually sold it to him. But we know that there exists such a svara of nachas ruach hasisi l'bayli. So we shouldn't trust a raya either. So answers the Gemara, ha'itmar Allah. We explained that Mishnah where she says Nachas Ruach Hasisi L'Bayli when she sells it to somebody else is in more limited circumstances. Namely, that Amar Rabba Baravuna Lo Nitzucha Ela Ba'osan Shalosh Sados. The Mishnah only needs to tell me that the Mekach is not binding when she sells it to this third party who first bought it from the husband and then went and bought it from her. That the Mekach from her is not binding specifically when it comes to three particular fields. Achas Shekas of Labiksubasa. One particular field is a field that he clearly identified in the ksuba as being meshubad to paying off her ksuba, because we assume she has more of a smichas das. She relies a little more heavily on a field that's identified by name in the ksuba. Now the ksuba says that all of his nechasim are meshubad to the ksuba. Everything he owns is meshubad to the ksuba. But it's unusual for him to, in addition to saying everything he owns is meshubad to the ksuba, to specifically by name identify a field. So she's going to have a certain extra level of smichas das on a field that's particularly identified in the ksuba. V'achas sheyichid la b'ksubasa. And another is a field that maybe he didn't write into the ksuba, but balpeh, he told her that you'll always be able to collect from this field. So the ksuba says everything is meshubad, but Baal Peh, he said, and you know I have that property, and he tells her about a specific property that's meshubad, so she has a smichas das on that as well. Va'achas shechnisa lo shum mishalah. And the third is a field that she brings from her father's house at the time of the nisuin, and they evaluate what it's worth, and they write it into the shtar ksuba, and he's mekabel achrayus on that, meaning it's what we call nichsei tzon barzel, that even though it's not written as a shiba to the ksuba any more than any of the other properties, but this is an old field that she has in her family. So she already has a relationship with this field. She already has a history with this field. So she's naturally going to have a little more of a smichas das on a field that was hichnis lo shum mishalah, on a field that is nichsei tzon barzel. So now, based on that, the Gemara is going to have to, we still haven't answered our question. We haven't explained exactly why it is that there's a svara of nachas ruach hasisi l'bayli when she sells the field to a third party, but there's no svara of, there's no taina of nachas ruach hasisi l'bayli when she sells the field to her husband. All we said is that Mishnah that talks about nachas ruach hasisi l'bayli is talking about one of these three fields. So the Gemara finishes up the teretz. So the mute mai, what do you mean it's only talking about one of these three fields? What's it not talking about? Meaning, which fields can she not say nachas ruach hasisi l'bayli? If it's coming to exclude all the other nechasim that the husband owns, that if she sells her shibud to this guy, to this third party, the shibud she has in those fields, that she's not allowed to collect that from her ksuba, she's not able to say nachas ruach hasisi l'bayli. That doesn't make any sense, because if in these fields, even though she has a special connection to these fields, she can say, I was only doing nachas ruach in order that he shouldn't be upset with me. So So certainly there's going to be an extra sense of Eva, an extra sense of animosity or concern from the husband's perspective if she doesn't sell her shibud in the fields that she has no shaychus with. Because I understand the husband might say, you don't want to sell your rights in the fields that you feel very connected to, that you have a special shibud in, that you have a history with. Why on earth aren't you willing to sell your shibud in the fields that you have no shaychus to whatsoever, that your only shaychus is that they are meshubah to your ksuba? When do you plan on collecting? How soon exactly do you plan on collecting your ksuba? Why are you even thinking about your ksuba? So it causes the husband to say, to think, it must be that einayich nasata begerishin ubemisa, that you're hoping to get divorced, or worse, you're hoping that I'm going to die and you're going to collect your ksuba. So it would create a greater sense of Eva, and for sure she should be able to say Nachas Ruach Sisi Lebaili. So how does it make sense that when a third party buys the property from the husband and then buys her rights to the property from her, that she's only able to say Nachas Ruach Hasisi Lebaili when it comes to the field she has a Shaychus to? No, then Kal V'chomer she could say Nachas Ruach Hasisi Lebaili with the fields that she doesn't have a Shaychus to, because that's really going to generate Eva if she doesn't agree to sell those fields. So they must not be coming to exclude that. It must be that Eino Chinami, all of the properties, if she sells, she has the right to say Nachas Ruach Hasisi Lebaili. Except what it's coming to exclude is Nichsei Malug. That's where she cannot say Nachas Ruach Hasisi Lebaili, because Nichsei Malug are really hers, and she has every right to refuse to sell that which belongs to her. So if the husband sold his rights first, and then she sold her rights, then since she has every right to refuse to do so, by selling it, the Mekach is binding. She's not going to be able to say, oh, I just did it to make my husband happy, so my husband shouldn't be upset with me. Why on earth would your husband be upset with you? It's yours. You could do whatever you want with it. So in our Mishnah also, our Mishnah is talking about Nechsei Malug. So she's not, so when the husband buys her Nechsei Malug, she cannot later claim that, oh, I was just Nachas Ruach Hasisi Lebaili. No, it's not just Nachas Ruach Hasisi Lebaili. There's no Chashash Eva, and if the husband therefore is able to bring a Raya, whether it's Edom or whether it's a Shtar, then he in fact purchased it, so then Mechokayim, the sale is binding. So again, what we did so far is we said that our Mishnah says a husband does not have a chazaka in his wife's nechasim. The implication is that if he has a raya or edim, then we assume that he actually did buy it. So we said, but wait, shouldn't she be able to say nachas ruach hasisi lebaili? He wasn't serious. I didn't really sell it to you. So the answer the Gemara says is no. That svara nachas ruach hasisi lebaili doesn't apply to nechsei malug. That only applies to other properties, but not to Nechsei Malug. When it comes to Nechsei Malug, it's hers, and there is no svar of Nachas Ruach Hasisi Lebaili. Period. So now the Gemara says, okay, but let's attack this idea that a haraya yesh, that if a husband has haraya, that he had purchased the field from his wife, let's attack it from a different perspective. That such a raya is acceptable, let's attack it from a different perspective. Namely, that there's an amora that seems to be against that implication of the Mishnah. Ha'amar ha'meimar, ish v'isha shemachru b'nichse melog, la'asu v'lo klum. Meaning, we're saying in our Mishnah that if a husband buys the nichse melog from his wife with a raya, with a shtar, with edim, that it's a valid sale and that it's that it's binding. But Amemar said that if a man and a woman that sell the Nechsei Malug, lo asu v'lo klum, the Mekach is not chal at all. And the understanding is, the Gemara's understanding right now, that Amemar means to say that if the man sells it and then the woman sells it, the sale is not binding because she'll always be able to say Nachas Ruach Hasisi Lebaili. So the Gemara is saying, well then, Kol Shekein, when she sells it to the husband directly, she should be able to say Nachas Ruach Hasisi Lebaili. So how could we be medayik from our Mishnah that if the husband brings a raya, the Mekach is going to be chal? Why do we say if the husband brings a raya that she had sold it to him, that the Mekach is kayam? So I answer the Gemara two possibilities. Ki itmar da meimar. First of all, it could be that when a meimar says that if both the man and the woman sell the nichsei malug, it's loss of lo klum, that's hecha dezabin ihu umis. The case is that the husband had sold it, not the wife, the husband had sold it, and then he died. Asya ihi umapka. Then the woman can come and take the field away from the lukuchos. Inami, or a different case, Zabna Ihi, if she's the one that sold it, Umesa, and she dies, even though when she dies, the husband no longer has the rights to the peros of those nechasim, and there would be room to argue that he doesn't yarshin it because she already sold her portion of that field, her rights, her ownership of that field, while she was alive. So the chiddush is, Asa Ihu Umapik, that the husband can come and take it away from the lukuchos. B'takanta d'rabban, why can he take it away from the lukuchos? I would imagine she sold the field. It's not hers anymore. So what's he claiming? He's claiming a Yerusha? Well, once she dies, obviously he has no peros anymore. He doesn't get the parents of Nechsem Lot. So he's claiming a Yerusha on the field. She sold it. Yeah, it's a Takana Drabanan. Okay, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, the Takana Drabanan has been reported to us by Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, Dam Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, Be'usha Hiskinu, they made a Takana in Usha. Usha was one of the 10 places that the Sanhedrin went to Galus, the Sanhedrin was exiled to, and there were a number of Takanos that were made in Usha, we have throughout Shas. So one of the Takanos Usha was Ha'isha Shemachra, Minichse Melug, Umesa Balmosi, Miyana Lukuchos, that if a woman sells the Nichse Melug while her husband is alive, and then she dies, so the husband could go take it away from the Lukuchos, because the husband is considered a Lokeach Rishon, even though he didn't own the Guf HaKarka while she was alive. She owned the Guf HaKarka, he only owned the Peros. So that's what Amemar was talking about. If either the husband or the wife sold the Nechse Melug, then we say Lo Asu V'lo Klum. Then the Mekach is not Kayim. Aval Hecha Tzvinu Travayu Li Alma. But if they both sold the Nechse Melug, a third party comes, buys it from the husband, and then goes and pays the wife for her rights in the Nechse Melug, then Inami Zabni Ihil Didei. Or if she sold it to him, then Zvina Zvini. Then the Mechira is going to be binding, and therefore it's not a problem at all with our Mishnah. What was our Kasha? That our Mishnah implies that a husband does not, our Mishnah says that a husband does not have a Chazaka B'Nechse Yishto, which implies that Haraya Yeish, that if he has a Raya with Edom or Ashtar, that he had purchased Nechse Yishto, then Itaka does belong to him. So he said, that's against Amemar. Amemar says, a man and a woman sell Nechse Melug. It doesn't do anything. So Gemara says, no, you totally misunderstood Amemar. Amemar does not say if a man and a woman sells the Nechse Melug, if a man and his wife sell the Nechse Melug, that it's not a binding sale. He says, if a man or his wife sells the Nechse Melug, then the sale is not a binding sale, then the other party will be able to come and take it. But if they both sell it, then of course it's a binding sale. And therefore, if she sells it to him, it's also a binding sale. So the first case we said was that the case that Amemar was talking about, where he sold it and then died, and then she can come and take it away from the Lukuchos. So the Rashbam says that means that the husband is not able to sell the property because he only owns the peros. What he could sell is the guf, if the guf hakarka, if his wife dies and he should one day yoresh it, and that would not be considered a mechira and a davar shel bal yoldam, because after takanas usha, if the woman were to sell nuchse melug and she would die, the husband would be mosim yad al kuchos, because the chum make him like a lokeach rishon. So you see that he has some type of ownership even while she's alive, meaning even though really he's only entitled to the payros while she's alive, but the Takana Zusha makes it that he's like a Lokeach Rishon. So that's how the Rashbam understands what that means when we say that if he sells it and he dies, Umis, and he dies, she can take it away from the Lukuchos. The Rashba and other Rishonim say that even if she dies, the husband could take it away from the Lukuchos. Wow, meaning the husband sold it to this third party, and then the wife dies, the husband could go back to that third party and take it back from them. That's how the Rashba says, Umis means if either one of them dies. Not only if he dies can she take it, but if she dies, he can take it, because the karka was hers and his mechira was totally invalid. Meaning he said, yes, I sold it to you, I didn't own it, and therefore, now that my wife died, now I'm the real owner. Whatever you bought was worthless, so he's going to take it back. The only reason it says umis is because of the seifa. The seifa was the case where she sold it, so then it's only if the husband dies that he's that she could be motzi miyad al kuchos. But if she dies, rather, the husband is motzi miyad al kuchos. But if the husband dies, she cannot be motzi. The mechira would be a valid mechira. So anyway, so that's the machlokas Rishonim over here. And then the other case was that she sold it and then she dies, so then the husband is able to take it away from the Lukuchos. The idea is that if she dies, even though as soon as she dies, the husband is no longer entitled to the payros of the nechassim. Now, why is that true? I mean, that was an assumption that we made, that the husband is no longer entitled to the payros of the nechassim the second that she dies. So the Rashbam writes, because the whole takana of payros was tachas pidyona, was in exchange for the fact that if she gets captured, that he would have to be poled to her. Well, once she dies, there's no pidyon anymore. So once the possibility of pidyon goes away, the takana of payros goes away as well, the Rashbam writes. Achronim point out that it sounds from the Rashbam that the ikr takana was about the pidyon, and since there's no more pidyon, mimela the payros goes away. But that's not really what we learned in yesterday's daf in Mentesim Beis, where we said that that the husband can get out of the takana of the pidyon, and meaning because the ikr takana the ikr takana was really about the payros, it sounded like. So over here also we can say that if she dies, he's not her husband anymore, and therefore he's not zakai beperos l'chaseha from then on. Meaning that's the svar, that simply that he's not the husband, and therefore the takana goes away. Okay, but so that is answer number one. Again, we had what we thought was a stira, that a meimar seems to be against our Mishnah, because our Mishnah implies that haraya yesh, that if the husband has a raya, he has edim, he has a shtar, that he purchased the nichsei melug, then we're going to trust him. But then a meimar said that if the husband and the wife sell the nichsei melug, then it's totally invalid. So answer number one was, a meimar never said that. A meimar said if the husband or the wife sells the nichsei melug, it's invalid, not if the husband and the wife sells the nichsei melug, it's invalid. Answer number two, the iba yisema, a meimar damer krab lazar. Another way to answer is that really a meimar did mean what we thought he meant, that if they both sold it, the sale is invalid. If a guy who's lokach min ish v'chazer v'lokach min isha, someone goes and buys the property from the husband first, and then goes and buys it from the wife, he is not kona that property. And therefore, kal v'chomer, if the woman sells it to her husband, he has not been kona that property. Aye, but the Mishnah said, haraya yesh, that if he has a raya that he had purchased it from his wife, he has been kona the property. Yeah, that's what the Mishnah held. But a meimar is assuming like a different tana. A meimar, damar k'Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar disagrees with the Rabbanan. Our Mishnah is assuming like the sheet of the Rabbanan. What's the Rabbi Elazar? What's the Rabbanan? What's the context? Where do they have such a machlokas? So says Gemara, Ditanya, we have a brisa as follows. Hamocher es avdo, if a person sells his evet kanani to somebody else, upasak imo, and he makes a deal with the lokeach, sheisham shenu shloshim yom, that this Eved should stay working for me for another 30 days after the Mechira, meaning I still have something going on that I really need his help around the house or whatever for another 30 days. So do me a favor, even though you're buying the Eved, we're going to write into the Shtar that I'm still going to have it for another 30 days, similar to the way sometimes people will sell a house, they'll do the closing, but they'll keep the house for another 30 days because they get their other home isn't ready or whatever. So I need this Eved for another 30 days. So there is a din in the Torah called Yoma Yomayim, that if a master strikes an eved, makas maves, and the eved dies because of the makah, so if the eved stays alive for 24 hours, the adon is not chayiv misa for it. So who has that din of yom yomayim? Who has the special din that as long as the eved survives 24 hours, the adon is not going to be chayiv misa? Is it the original owner who still has the shibul of the eved for 30 more days? Or is it the person who has title now, the person who actually owns the Eved right now? So we're going to have a machlokas tanaim, four-way machlokas tanaim as follows. So again, Hamocher Sabdo Pasuki Moshe Yisham Shenu Shloshim Yom, Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir is the first shita, he says, Harishon Yeshna B'din Yom HaYomayim. The original Bailim has the din of Yom HaYomayim. Yom HaYomayim is the Lashon of the Pasuk. Rashi Allah Torah points out, it has nothing to do with Yomayim. It really just means 24 hours. That's a Yom, that's Ki Yomayim. 24 hours straddles 2 days, and therefore, it's because if you were to start right now at 6:38 a.m., so it would end tomorrow at 6:38 a.m., which means that it's both Wednesday and Thursday. So that's a Yom HaYomayim. That's why we call it Yom HaYomayim. So the first guy has the din of Yom HaYomayim, and Mipnei Shu Tachtav, because the evidence is still Meshuba to him, and the Pasuk says, Umeis Tachas Yado. So you see, Tachtav really matters. Vasheni Eino B'din Yom HaYomayim. But the guy who had just purchased the Eved does not have the din of Yom HaYomayim. He's like anybody else, where if you strike the Eved, most you must. So even if he dies from the wounds that you inflicted upon him months later, we're going to kill him. Because he's not tachtav of the second Adon. And as far as the Chiv Misa for murdering him, an Eved Kanani has the din of Yisrael. Because Eved Kanani is Chayiv Mitzvah Ki Yisrael. So you murder an Eved Kanani, you're Chayiv Misa. So just like if you murder Yisrael, you're chayiv misa. So the Gemara explains this sheet of Rameir kasavar kinyan peros kinyan guftani. Rameir holds that the one who still owns the shibud of the eved, he's considered the real owner of the eved. Because if you own the peros, if you own that which the eved produces, that's considered to own the real eved. And that's a general principle. Whenever you own the peros of something, that's considered that you are the real owner. Shita number two, Rabbi Yehuda Omer hasheni yeshno b'din yom yom. No, it's the second guy, the new owner, the one that has title to the Eved, that's subject to the din of Yom HaYomayim, that has the special kula of Yom HaYomayim. Mimneshu Kaspel, because it's his kesef, he's the monetary owner of this Eved. And the Pasuk says that the reason for this din is ki kaspo hu. So you see, it's his kesef. Harishonenu b'din Yom HaYomayim, she'eno kaspo. The first guy is not included in the din of Yom HaYomayim, because he is not his kesef. So what does Rabbi Yehuda hold in principle? Kasavar, kinyan peros, lav kikinyan guftami. Rabbi Yehuda holds that having a kinyan peros in the Eved is not considered that you really own the Eved, and therefore he's only considered to be the Eved of the second guy. Now it happens to be there's a sugya in Gittin where there's a machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon with Rabbi Meir, by someone who's lokeach stei achuza from his father. The Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon hold that kinyan peros is kikinyan guf. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon hold kinyan peros is kikinyan aguf, and over here Rabbi Yehuda holds kinyan peros is lav kikinyan aguf. So Tosfos points out the discrepancy between the two sugyos, and Tosfos says that what it says over here is true. I mean, over here it's saying Rabbi Yehuda holds lav kikinyan aguf. What the Gemara in Gittin was saying is that it's possible that Rabbi Yehuda's kinyan peros is kikinyan aguf, that there's no hechrich from there that it's lav kikinyan aguf. But as far as what he really holds, we know he really holds lav kikinyan aguf because that's what it says over here. So far, two shitos. Who is included in the din of Yom HaYomayim? Rameir says only the first Adon because he's still Meshuba to him, and Rabbi Yehuda says only the second Adon because he's the real owner. Third shita, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shneyam Yeshnam b'din Yom HaYomayim. They both have the din of Yom HaYomayim. And if either one of them strikes this Eved, and the Eved survives the first 24 hours, they do not get killed for that. Zem Mepneshu Tachtav, the first owner, because he's still Meshuba to work for him. Vizem Mepneshu Kaspo, and the second one, because he has the Kinyan Kesef in him. Umesav Kalei, Ikin Peres Kinyan Guftami, Ilav Kinyan Guftami, Vesav Nefash Lahakel. And it's a suffix whether Kinyan Peres is Kinyan Guftami or not. So if I'm not sure, should we kill this Adon as a murderer? Well, I don't know if he has a din of Kinyan Peres Kinyan Guftami. I don't know if he has a din of the real owners. I can't kill a guy when I don't know. We can't impose a Chiyuv Misa when we don't know. And the Rashbam points out, why not? Why is there, where's the rule that if a person is Suffolk Chiyuv Misa, that you're not allowed to kill him? Because the Pasuk says, V'shaftu e'eda, v'hitzilu e'eda, that there's always a netiya not to carry out capital punishment. So if I'm not sure whether a person is chayiv capital punishment or not, v'hitzilu e'eda tells me that I'm not allowed to kill him. Tosos in Dibra Maskel the Suffolk says, that's how I know that I'm not allowed to kill a guy if I don't know if he's chayiv misa? You know, I mean, that's a little bit strange. I would have thought otherwise, that if I'm not sure whether a guy's chayiv misa or not, just play it safe and kill him. You're going to kill someone when you're not sure if a guy's chayiv misa? So Tosfos points out, even by mammon, we're not motzi mammon misafik, right? I'm going to be motzi a person's life misafik? I wouldn't take his money misafik. I'm motzi mechaver olav araya. So Mitzvah Eisen writes that the Rashbam is based on the Gemara Psachim. The Gemara Psachim, Daf Yud Beis, talks about v'yitzilu eda, but in the case of the Gemara, in Psachim was a sveksveik. That in a case where you would be motzi mamon, because you're not motzi mamon based on a suffix, but based on a sveksveika, we are motzi mamon. And therefore, I need to be told that in a case where I would be motzi mamon by a sveksveika, I would still apply the yitzilu eida, I would not be motzi a nefesh. based on a svek sveka. So that's how the mitzvah is suggests. Chassam Sofer just raises the question that if I'm not sure whether kinyan peres is kinyan guf, it turns out that the second guy is not able to sell him because maybe kinyan peres is kinyan guf and therefore it doesn't really belong to him, right? The second guy would not be allowed to sell the eved, and therefore in what sense is it really his? There's nothing he can actually do with it, so it's hard to understand why it should be shalom at all. So says the Gemara, Reb Lazar Omer, a fourth shita. Shne, and this is the shita of Rabbi Lazar, which is the one we're building toward, right? Meaning our kasha was, our amemar seems to be against our Mishnah, and the answer we're trying to suggest is, yes, amemar is against our Mishnah, but don't worry, our Mishnah assumes like all the people that argue on Rabbi Lazar, and amemar assumes like Rabbi Lazar. So what's Rabbi Lazar? Rabbi Lazar Omer, Shneim Einon B'din Yom HaYomayim. Neither of the first owner nor the second owner have the din of Yom HaYomayim, and they would both be executed for murdering this Eved, even if he survives 24 hours. Zelefi she'eno tachtav, the zelefi she'eno kaspo. The first one, the second one, because he's not working for him yet, and the first one because he doesn't have title to the Eved. V'yom Rava, my time is Rav Lazar, and Rav explains what's Rav Lazar based on, because Amakra, the pasuk says lo yukam ki kaspo hu. Kaspo hamiyuchad, though, if the guy, the Eved, gets up and he doesn't die within 24 hours, then we don't execute the Adon because the Eved is his kesef. Now, why do I need to say that? What's it adding? Because the Eved is his kesef, meaning that the pasuk is highlighting that it has to be that it's entirely his kesef, and that no one else has any chelek in that Eved. So from there we see that any kinyan aguf, anytime kinyan aguf belongs to one person and kinyan peros belongs to the other person, no one has sole rights on that Eved, and therefore no one's able to sell him. And that's what a meimar holds, that a woman and a man and his wife that both sell the nechse malug, it's totally not binding because no one has a right to do anything. Neither of them are really the owner of that nechse malug, neither of them have a right to sell it. But our Mishnah holds like the Chachamim, and therefore the woman is able to sell the nechse malug to her husband, because you don't have the sole rights, you're able to sell whatever rights you do have. So Taki is a machlokas tanaim, and a meimar in a chinami is against our Mishnah. So again, we try to understand how a meimar can be reconciled with our Mishnah, and we had two resolutions. Resolution number one was that we misunderstood a meimar. We thought a meimar was saying that if the husband and the wife sell the nechse malug, he was saying the husband or the wife. And resolution number two is no, we understood a meimar. A meimar is against our Mishnah, but it's really a machlokas tanaim between Rabbi Lazar and the other tanaim, whether you need exclusive ownership in order to be able to sell something. And certainly in nechse malug, nobody has exclusive ownership. This Gemara comes up in a discussion in Poskim in the oddest of all places, and that is in Hilchos Dalad Minim. When it comes to Esrog Hamorkav, if you have a grafted Esrog, it's the lemon and an Esrog tree, it's pasul. Why is it pasul? So the Taz writes, because it has a chelek of another min, and therefore it's like an Esrog that's chaser, meaning whatever elements of it are lemon, is as if that's missing, and an Esrog that's chaser, even just a little bit, is going to be pasul. So the Maram Alshich writes that it's such a svara that it's not considered an esrog. It's as if it doesn't, the part of it that's from a lemon is not considered an esrog, as if it doesn't exist, and therefore it's a chaser. And he brings a raya from a gemara later in the Masechta that brothers that are yoresh that buy an esrog with the yerusha money before they ever divided the estate are not yotzei v'chiyuv, because they can't be yotzei with an esrog b'shutfus, because there's a chelik that's not yours, and the chelik that's not yours is not kosher for a mitzvah. So over here also, there's a chelik that's not an esrog, and therefore it's not kosher for a mitzvah. However, in the tshuvas beis sha'arim, he rejects that raya, and he says, no, the psul of an esrog with a shutfus is not because it's chaser, it's because even the chelik that you own is not miyuchad to you, and therefore it's not lachem. And he says, that's what it says in our sugya, that an eved that sold for 30 days is not considered an eved, the eved of the kona, nor the eved of the mocher, meaning when you keep him for 30 days. And the reason is because it's not miyuchad for either one of them. So too, the esrog is not miyuchad for either one of the shutvim. And therefore, you can't bring in a raya from the din esrog hashutvim to the din of esrog hamorkav. So our Gemara serves as the basis to reject the raya for the shita sataz. The idea over here is that it's not miyuchad. That's a din in ownership. That's not a din in chaser. It's purely a din in ownership. So that's why the Achronim come up with other reasons. The Levush says the reason Nesrog Amorkav is possible is because Nevda Boaveira, that you're not allowed to be Markiv two minim with each other. So obviously, if you have a Nesrog Amorkav, someone did it. So if someone did an Aveira, it's not proper to use that which someone did an Aveira. Problem is, what if a guy was Markiv? Because a guy is allowed to be Markiv in Esrog. Can I then use that Esrog? And it was not Nevda Boaveira. Okay, back in the Gemara now. We said a man can't have a chazaka in his wife's nechasim, and because of that, she doesn't need to ever make a macha'a. So, frankly, Gemara v'amarav eshasish tzricha limchos, that an eshasish does have to make a macha'a. Well, b'man, who do we think she has to make a macha'a against when someone is being machzik in her property? Ilem ba'acher, if you think that she has to make a macha'a with some random third party that's being machzik in her property, meaning someone other than her husband, v'amarav ein machzik milichse eshasish. But Rav already told us that no one could have a chazaka in the nechasim of an eshasish, because she could always say, I assume my husband would do something about it. She doesn't have to make a machah. She could rely that her husband would have done something about it. Elav bebal. It must be that when we say that a woman does not have to make a machah when someone is machzik in her property, it means when her husband is being machzik in her property. So that when we say tzricha limchos, when Rav says tzricha limchos, it must be that it's when the husband is being machzik in her property. And therefore, isn't Rav against our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that no matter how long the husband uses the property for, he'll never develop a chazaka, and therefore it means she doesn't have to make a macha'a. But here Rav is saying that she does need to make a macha'a, and it can't be that she needs to make a macha'a against some other guy, because why would she need to make a macha'a against some other guy? Her husband should do that. No, it must be making a macha'a against her husband. So Gemara has two answers. Answer number one, Amar Rav Liolam Beba'al. That really, we're talking about the husband, and there is a case where the husband could have a chazaka. The husband dug in the field, and since it's Nichsei Melug, where he's only supposed to get the payros, he has no right to go and start ripping up the field. So that is a sign that he was kone it, and therefore, if he was not really kone it, she should have made a macha'a. So, but I thought if a person is mazik someone else's field by digging around and ripping up the whole field, even if you do it for 3 years, you can't claim that the field belongs to you, because the Bailim could say you weren't machzik de machzik inchi. So answer number one doesn't work. So Gemara has two ways to defend answer number one. Ema ein din chazak l'nizakin. The first way to defend answer number one is that maybe when we say there's no chazak l'nizakin, it just means that the mazik doesn't need to do it for 3 years in order to have a chazaka. You get a chazaka immediately. If you start ripping up a field and the previous owner of that field does not say something immediately, you must be the owner of it. They should say something immediately. It's one thing if you're just hanging out in the field. So that, you get 3 years. But for Nizakin, it's immediate, your chazaka. Iba Yisema, or it could be Lavit Marala. After all, didn't we say about Rav Nachman that Rav Mariamar Bukutra, Rav Zidamar Besakise? When do we say that you can't develop a chazaka for Nizakin? That's if you're doing something that brings a lot of smoke to the property, or you make a Besakise on the property, where even if you had a chazaka for a long time and the person had an opportunity to make a macha and didn't, your chazaka is still not going to work, because the person could say, you know, I thought I would be able to tolerate it. It's just too much. I can't tolerate this anymore. So that's where ein chazaka nizakin. So again, all of that is answer number one. How can Rav say that an eshasish needs to make a macha'a? I thought that a husband can never have a chazaka b'nichsei ishto. So answer number one is that if a husband can't have a chazaka by just living in the nichsei ishto, by just taking the payros of nichsei ishto, but he can have a chazaka if he starts ripping up the field, he starts tearing up the field, he starts destroying the field. Answer number two, Rav Yosef Amar Liolam Biacher, that really when we say that that a woman, when Rav says that Neshes Ish has to make a macha'a, it doesn't mean when her husband's in the property. She doesn't when the husband's in the property. The husband can't have a chazak anyway. We're talking about where someone else is being machzik in a chasim. We said Ein machzikim midichsei Neshes Ish. That's when the husband's alive, because she assumes that her husband is going to do something about it because he's the owner of the payros. Or she says that the husband must have sold the payros nuchsei meluk to that guy because it's his right to sell his payros nuchsei meluk, so I have nothing to be mocha for. But there is one case where she will have to make a macha'a. In a case where that guy had some of the years of chazaka while the husband was alive, and 3 more years of chazaka after the husband died, and he claimed that he had purchased the field from the husband, who in turn had purchased it from the wife. So Migodi Bayamale, since he could have said, I purchased this field from the husband for the sake of achiras, Achilles Peros, so long as he was alive, and if his wife dies first, then I'm going to get the Guf Asada as well. So if the husband dies first, I'm going to lose out. So, since he's going to have to give the field back to his wife, Mikan Ve'elach. So when the husband dies, I wanted to continue to be Machzik in the Sada, and therefore Anaz Bint Minach. I went and I bought it from you, and he'd be believed with such a taina that he went and he bought it from the wife. So Kiyamar Lanami Atz Vintalei V'Zavna Ne'ali. So when he comes and he says, you sold it to the husband, and then the husband sold it to me, mehem, and he'd be believed. And therefore, if she didn't in fact sell it, she should have made a macha'a within those 3 years in that unique case. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up with Gufa at the bottom of the page. Everyone have a wonderful day.